Dinah Lance is a fighter, and her one-woman war is against the czars of crime, the frightened men who dread the blonde bombshell, otherwise known as Black Canary.
Welcome back to Flowers and Fishnets, a Black Canary podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Daly, and this, well, this is the end, my friends. This is the final episode of Flowers and Fishnets, not just for the year 2015, but for the foreseeable future. Don't worry, though. If you've enjoyed hearing me talk about Black Canary comics for the last 20 episodes or so, you can still hear that in 2016. After all, comics are all about canceling and renumbering, right? In January, I'll be back with the all-new, all-different Power of Fishnets podcast, celebrating Black Canary and Zatanna in the pages of DC Comics. That's right, not just the blonde bombshell, but also the Princess of Prestidigitation. This new show will be on a different feed, and it will have a different website associated with it. I can't tell you more about that right now. I'll just say pay attention to my Twitter feed at RyanDaily01 for future updates about the new podcast. In the meantime, and on the subject of Black Canary and Zatanna, back on episode 20, I asked you to leave a comment on the show's blog or promote the podcast on Twitter for your chance to win a free copy of Black Canary and Zatanna Blood Spell. I ended up with about 25 names entered into the random drawing, and on the morning of December 12th, I put all the names into a cup and chose one name at random. And that name was Rob Kelly of the Aquaman Shrine and the Fire and Water podcast. But I already sent Rob a Christmas present this month, so he's disqualified. So, I picked another name, and the winner was Between the Pages, the blog that celebrates pop culture in the form of delicious cakes and desserts. Congratulations, Karen, from Between the Pages. Your copy of Black Canary and Zatanna Blood Spell is in the mail. And okay, folks, I'm sure that's what a lot of you were tuning in to hear, so now that you know you didn't win the graphic novel, you can either unsubscribe to this podcast now, or you can stick around. Because after this short promotional break, I'm going to recap Black Canary Issue 12, the final chapter of the Canary's 1993 ongoing series.
My name is Chad Bokelman. For 5 years, listeners were stuck with a mediocre show. Now we will fulfill our listeners' expectations to use the time and topics left to us and bring down those who are threatening to overtake us. To do this, Chad, we must become someone else. We must become something else.
Really?
What?
This is your original attempt?
Yeah, dude.
At a promo?
Yeah.
I think you're kind of confusing what this show's about, Chad.
All right, I got another one. All right.
Okay, maybe your second attempt will be a little more fresh and original.
Okay. All right.
I'm hoping. Yeah.
My name is Barry Allen, and I'm the fastest man alive. When I was a child, I saw my mother killed by something impossible. My father went to prison for her murder. And...
Okay. Stop! Time out!
What?
This is the Lantern Cast. We're supposed to be talking about Green Lantern. Not necessarily new material, because most people don't like the books these days, but the point still is, we're supposed to be talking about Green Lantern.
I guess you're right. And I guess the old show wasn't really mediocre. I just thought it'd be funny.
You did your best, Chad. That's what's so tragic.
Yeah. Well, why don't you tell them what the show really is about?
It's about Green Lantern.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's the comics. There's let's run down some things. We've done what? We've done commentaries.
We've done movie commentaries. We've done our Ring Cyclopedia stuff, reviewing you know, props and rings and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. Movie reviews, we do stuff like that too.
Yeah, yeah, we've commented, done running commentary on issues per month. We've done random issue reviews, old stuff and new, lots of old stuff recently. We've even had interviews, both in the old iteration of the show and the new iteration of the show with me and Mark. So tons of stuff here over at the Lantern Cast for you guys to listen to. It's not just one, we're not a one-trick pony over here.
Stole my line. I was just going to say that. No, we have a pretty broad base of topics and things that we do, and I think we have a little bit for everybody. So we certainly would appreciate everybody coming to check us out, and we think you won't be disappointed.
Yeah, you can find us at lanterncast.com. We're also on iTunes and Stitcher, so search for Lanterncast, and you can find us easily there. And if they want to contact us, they're more than welcome to do so. Mark, you got that information right. You always do.
LanternCast@gmail.com, LanternCast@gmail.com, and we even have a voicemail line. Guess what? It's 708-LANTERN.
Awesome. And we're on Facebook and Twitter, so find the Lantern Cast in whatever way suits you best, but definitely give us a listen either on our website, on iTunes, or on Stitcher. We're always here for you guys, and I guess what? Closing line, light the lantern?
keep the emerald flame burning.
All right. Awesome.
Black Canary issue 12 was cover dated December 1993. If you look at the whole run of the series based on cover dates, it lasted the calendar year of 1993. But of course, the actual on-sale dates would have been October 19th of that year, according to Mike's Amazing World of DC Comics. This issue was written by regular series writer Sarah Byam, lettered by Steve Haney, colored by Julia Lachman, and edited by Jordan Garfinkel and Denny O'Neill. A new artist was brought in for the series finale, Leo Durinona. The cover was drawn by Federico Cueva, who, according to Mike's Amazing World, is credited with this, and only this, issue. This is the only thing he ever produced, according to their records, which is a little surprising given the time. I mean, this is one of the most 90s covers I've ever seen. Whereas Trevor Von Eden's anatomy generally looked gross, like fat rejects from a Frank Miller comic, Cueva's cover looks like he graduated from the Jim Lee Rob Liefeld school with, oh, say, a C-plus average. It's not unattractive on its own merits, it's just so blatantly
extreme,
as Nathaniel Wayne would say. It shows Black Canary in her new biker hooker look, kneeling down, ready to fight, and behind her is some guy wearing only boxer shorts and strapped-on pouches. And, of course, he's got two big, unnatural-looking guns in his hands because it makes it look even more
extreme!
The story begins with Black Canary visiting her mother's grave in Gotham Cemetery. But Dinah Laurel Lance isn't the only one come to pay her respects to the original blonde bombshell. There's a man placing flowers by Dinah Drake Lance's headstone, a man carrying a semi-automatic weapon strapped to the outside of his trench coat. Dinah asks what he's doing there, and the man seems so surprised and so excited to see her that he grabs her and kisses her. Only then does he realize he's not kissing the right Dinah Lance. We find out through their very casual dialogue that the man is Jack Lynch. He used to do private investigation work for Dinah's father, Larry Lance, but he fell in love with her mother, the original Black Canary. Dinah gets in Jack's car, offering to buy him lunch so they can reminisce about the original Canary. But something inhuman has followed Jack Lynch, something that leaps onto the roof of the car as they're driving off, something that will come to be described throughout the issue as a genetic monster that's part armadillo, part cheetah, and part baboon. Jack calls them Dillos and gives Dinah a machine gun. He shoots the one on the roof, but two more attack the car, one of them slicing into the front tire, causing the car to swerve and crash. Dinah is thrown through the windshield, harmlessly, it must be said, and manages to flip in midair, kick one of the Dillos, and blast it with her gun. Jack jumps out of the car and fires a gun that shoots harpoons that pin one of the Dillos to the ground. Then he tells Dinah to get back in the car as he starts to drive away. She leaps onto the trunk, one of the Dillos bites Jack's arm, but Dinah kicks it away and they drive over it. Dinah pushes Jack into the passenger seat and takes over the driving. Jack refuses to go to the hospital for his Dillo bite, saying they'll be waiting for him, whoever they are. Instead, Jack tells her to take him to Seattle. As they speed off for their cross-country trek, a strange man watches them leave. This man appears to be a mercenary soldier, wearing armor and no less than 20 pouches, and he's in some kind of robotic exoframe vehicle that looks like a reject from RoboCop or a 90s toy line. Cut to Seattle, what must be 3 or 4 days later. The Huntress oversees the restoration of Sherwood Florist's stained glass window and the other property damage that was suffered to Dinosaur when Scimitar's men shot up the place back in issue 9. Bethy Mignola and several other women whom Black Canary rescued from Karistan last issue are helping take care of the place in gratitude for Dinah saving them from Scimitar and getting them the reconstructive surgery they needed when they returned to America. Of course, anytime you show two movers carrying a big glass window, you know what's going to happen next. Dinah drives Jack's car straight through the stained glass window, narrowly missing running over the movers. Huntress pulls Dinah out of the car, realizing that she fell asleep behind the wheel because she's been driving for days. Four women carry Jack Lynch out of the car. You know, not to sound sexist, but they probably should have asked the two professional movers to help carry Jack inside. One of the women is a nurse and diagnoses Jack as having lost a lot of blood and cracked a few ribs. They treat Jack and let him sleep in Dinah's bed for a couple of hours. When he regains consciousness, he gives Dinah, and us, the necessary exposition for his situation. After Dinah's father retired from his detective agency, Jack Lynch went to work for some secretive spy types who wanted to fill their databases with all sorts of information on celebrities and even potential superheroes. This group used the information for blackmail and extortion, and the money was used to fund an overseas wildlife preserve called New Sparta. But the wildlife preserve was itself just a cover for a mad science gene-splicing project called Gradium 3. The Dillos were the result of one of the gene-splicing efforts to combine man and various animals into a stronger, more adaptable type of predator. Or, you know, whatever. They're also experimenting on perfecting humans, the first successful result of which was the pouch-covered soldier dude we saw a few pages earlier. His name is Prime Number, and wouldn't you know it, he also has a red mark running down the left side of his face over his eye, because what's more 90s than a soldier dude with lots of pouches and some kind of mark over his eye? Jack barely escaped from Prime Number and tells Dinah that he's been on the run for the last 3 years trying to sabotage the group's public image and private operations. He went to Original Canary's grave because he was lonely and in need of a morale boost. Instead, he found the younger Dinah, onto whom it is all too easy to transfer his attraction, and who is willing and able to help him in his request. Just then, Prime Number crashes into Sherwood Florist, riding on his Saturday morning cartoon mecha vehicle. Then he unleashes some robotic dogs to tear Dinah and Jack apart, because, you know, the armadillo cheetah hybrids weren't enough, nor is the murder mobile. He needs robot dogs. Jack gets out of bed in just his boxers, grabs one of Ollie's old bows and arrows, and shoots one of the robot dogs with just an arrow. Hey, I guess it worked for Hawkeye in Age of Ultron. Destroying that dog starts a fire in the bedroom. Dinah and Jack run downstairs to her shop, chased by two more robot dogs. Huntress and Bethy help Jack get his weapons. He fashions a makeshift explosive device and blows up the other two dogs on the stairway. Meanwhile, Dinah has changed into her biker hooker Black Canary costume. They're all about to break out through the shop when Prime Number busts in on the murder mobile, holding in his hands no less than 6 grenades with the pins removed. Black Canary grabs, like, it looks like an ionic column, like you'd find in a Greek temple, but it's only about 2 feet tall, so maybe it's a stand you'd put a flower pot on? She grabs it and throws it at Prime Number. It strikes him right in the side of the head, knocking him off the murder mobile. He falls to the ground, and all the loose grenades fall on top of him. Jack pushes her out of the way of the explosion and then fires his weapon meaninglessly into the fire to make sure Prime Number is dead. Then Black Canary, Jack, and some of the other women stand outside the shop as Sherwood Florist burns to the ground. Note, we don't see Huntress outside, so maybe she died in the explosion. The story ends with Black Canary telling Jack she's going to go with him. She has nothing left here, so she's going to help him destroy the nameless agency that is behind all of this. And that is how the issue, and the series, Black Canary's first ongoing comic series, ends. With a promise that will never be fulfilled, because no writer ever bothered to tell the story, and no reader ever cared to ask.
Hi guys, I'm Dan Kurtzky, and I want to tell you about my podcast called Dan's Fandom. It's a show where I dive deep into anything from the world of comics, movies, anime, and video games that I find really interesting and worth talking about for an episode or two. I've done character spotlights on Batman, She-Hulk, and Korra, in-depth analysis on Man of Steel and Sword Art Online. I've taken a fair look at films like Twilight and Michael Bay's Ninja Turtles to see if they're actually that bad, and I've explored the interactive nature of video games by looking at the illusion of choice offered to the player. And I'm just getting started. New episodes come out every Tuesday. You can search for Dan's Fandom in iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite podcatcher app. Talk to you soon.
Okay. First, the art. Leo Durinona, the fill-in artist on this issue, has about 30 credits on Mike's Amazing World, dating back to the mid-1970s. His very sporadic career includes a lot of mystery and war comics for DC, Marvel, and Dark Horse. Probably his best work, at least his most noteworthy contribution, is Richard Dragon Kung Fu Fighter, which introduced not only Richard Dragon, but Ben Turner, who became Bronze Tiger of Suicide Squad. Not that he's going to be in the Suicide Squad movie or anything. At least he was in Season 2 of Arrow, so there's that. This was the second-to-last comic Durinona drew, according to Mike's Index, so if he had wanted a longer career in professional comics, this issue did not save him. And I can't help but wonder if that's because he didn't read the script very well. There are a lot of times in this issue where the art contradicts the story. Right away on page 2, Black Canary and Jack kiss. Now, the panel as drawn shows an intimate, passionate kiss. Dinah's arm is wrapped around his neck. Jack's hand is rising up under her jacket, totally copying a feel. This is a kiss between lovers, and Dinah is no stranger to loving older men, as Mike Grell established. But that is not what the scene is. Jack spots her and confuses her with the original Dinah Drake. Our Black Canary has never seen this guy before. He's a total stranger, with a freaking gun strapped to his back, hanging out in the cemetery, and he leans in to kiss her. She should be pulling back or judo tossing him into her father's headstone. By the way, speaking of headstones, Dinah Drake Lance's grave says she lived 1938 to 1991, meaning she only lived 53 years. I guess that seems about right, I suppose, if Dinah Laurel Lance is in her mid to early 20s when her mother died. But 1938 is a curious and problematic year. Dinah would have been too young to fight crime as Black Canary during World War II, so how did she know the Justice Society of America? The time in Ragnarok can explain how the JSA didn't age that much between their time in the 40s and the then-modern era of the 80s and 90s, but Dinah Drake didn't go to Ragnarok with the others. She stayed on Earth, aging like a normal woman. In that case, she should have been closer to 70 when she died. But then Dinah Laurel would have to be older too. God, age is the bane of Black Canary's existence, no matter what side of the Crisis on Infinite Earths you're on. Another contradiction between the art and the story occurs on page 7, when one of the Dillos scratches through the car's right side and tire. But Black Canary's narrative caption says the thing takes a quarter inch of rubber out of the front left tire. That should have been caught by the editor and corrected by the letterer. Then, on page 9, Jack tells Dinah to hurry up and gets back in the car, and the next panel shows Dinah holding onto the trunk of the car for her dear life while the car appears to be speeding away down the road. Why is he driving off with her on the back of the car? Why didn't he wait for her to get inside? And then the next panel shows Jack with the driver's side door open and the Dillo bites his arm, and then Dinah kicks it. Why is he driving with the door open? How does she manage to leap forward to kick the Dillo if the car is moving faster? Or if the car wasn't moving, why did she say she was gripping the back of the car when it's obviously racing forward? Then on page 12, when we meet Huntress and Bethy Mignola renovating Sherwood Forest, it appears to be broad daylight and Huntress is in costume. But weirder than that is Bethy's outfit. She's wearing a miniskirt. In the previous story arc, Bethy's hamstring had been cut, rendering her unable to stand up straight and walk. It's explained in the scene that Dinah helped arrange for Bethy and the other girls saved from Scimitar to have reconstructive surgeries to repair their legs, but still, at this point, she would have had quite a scar on her leg. I don't imagine she would have been walking around in a cute miniskirt. Then on page 20, when the villain, whose name is Prime Number, my god, when he attacks, Dinah and Jack run downstairs in one panel, but then Dinah is looking up the stairs at Huntress and the other girls in the next panel. These glaring inconsistencies with the art and script really disrupt the story and cast a pall on the art that is otherwise not so bad. It's of a particular 90s style, but the style isn't bad on itself. Which brings me to this. The first thing that came to my mind as I read it, from the cover to the final page, was that this book, under the new interior and cover artist, looks and feels way, way more 90s than any other book in this series. And that made me think I needed some help in reviewing this issue. So please welcome my special guest, Nathaniel Wayne from the Council of Geeks podcast and 90s Comics Retrial. Welcome, Nathaniel.
When I started 90s Comics Retrial, if I had known I was going to become the go-to guy for people who couldn't handle their 90s stuff and needed a spotter, I probably wouldn't have started, because, dear God, man. Okay. Yeah, to say that this is very 90s is quite an understatement. This thing, like, right from the cover, you look at this cover and see this nearly naked man who still has a pouch strap, just firing guns in a position, spreading out his body, making himself the largest possible target, and a pair of thighs that happen to have a torso on them as well, right down at his crotch. Yeah, that's really, really 90s. It was like DC out of nowhere decided they needed a Cable analog to close out Black Canary's story.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose the one nice thing I'll say about it is the first page, not the cover, dear God, not the cover, but the first page I actually really like as a piece of art. I really like how the shadows of the tree branches sort of almost recreate the fishnet look on her leg, and it's a cool image, and then it just gets really weird because she goes up to him and he turns around and embraces her and they kiss, but she doesn't know him. And she doesn't immediately slug him in the face. God, it's
also
just so weird.
And also, like, okay, I get it. He's got a gun with him, but just wearing it over his back, like, his gun is fully, like,
oh, that.
And she just walks up to him. He's got a machine gun out in public, just slung on the back. And
well, he's got a machine gun on his back. He's got another one strapped to his hip.
Yeah, in 90s. Yeah, everybody in comics has guns. Like, wouldn't that, like, put you off go approaching a random stranger if you saw that?
Well, we don't have too long to think about it because we go four pages without something needlessly crashing in and demanding a car chase action scene. I'm sorry, scrashing in.
Here's another part. The car crashes, and what happens to Dinah?
Well, she flies out like it was always her plan for the car to crash, and she flies out gun in hand. We don't know when she took this. And then she starts firing a gun. Now, was she ever using a gun? I mean, at some point in her history, I'm sure she has picked up a gun, but she's not a gun-fighting character.
In the Green Arrow comics that were published around this time, she did go through a gun phase. I believe those were published before this one, so yeah, she's, within the last couple of years, has had guns and had not in this comic.
Yeah, and again, that's just so 90s, just out of nowhere, she just leaps out and immediately just starts blowing away this thing, not knowing what it is or why it's there, because she's got a gun and it's a monster. Why wouldn't you just blow it away?
But again, how does she get out of the car? She's flying through the windshield. The windshield is already shattered. The glass is already shattered, presumably on impact, because if she's actually breaking through the windshield as she's being propelled out of the car, there's no more Black Canary.
Yeah.
That's not something you do and you just flip and you're unscathed. That's the thing that pulverizes your bones and shreds the skin off of your body.
Let's not forget the fact that it crashes into the tree on the driver's side. We see the guy's head hit the steering wheel.
Mm-hmm.
And then a page later, he also sideways leaps out of the car, gun drawn, and starts shooting.
Now, she's on the back.
Yeah.
Is the car moving?
It's supposed to be. You got all the speed lines going.
Why is he driving off without her? This is the daughter of the woman that you loved, and he gets in the car and he drives off, and she has to cling to the back of the car in order to not be left behind and mauled by the Dillos, which,
oh my God, what an unintimidating name that is.
If you're gonna shorten the name Armadillo, don't shorten it to Dillo. Like, if you're a college football fan, maybe, but if you want to take it seriously as something threatening, it's, oh no, not Dillo. Anything but Dillo.
No. But see, we have to have her grabbing onto the back of the car.
We need the butt shot.
Yes, we have that glorious ass shot right there. And they drive The thing is, they say, you know, take me to Seattle. Okay, I didn't know where you were in the first place.
Gotham City.
Okay, I don't know where Gotham is supposed to be.
East Coast.
So they're gonna drive to Seattle in a car with no windshield and a shredded tire that has crashed into a tree. Is anyone else picturing planes, trains, and automobiles when they get pulled over? You think this vehicle's safe for road use? And of course, they can't just arrive at the scene. They have to crash through the brand new window for Sherwood Florists.
So I have a big problem with this moment.
Yep.
She crashes through because she's exhausted because she's been driving for days.
Mm-hmm.
That's her choice. She's out of desperation, but she's been driving without sleep for days. She crashes through a window, nearly kills innocent people. This is not that different than if she'd been driving drunk, in mm-hmm. my mind, and yep. just lucked out of killing an innocent person. This is irresponsible, borderline, felonious, reckless driving.
Our hero, ladies and gentlemen.
I have a big problem with that. And that's just lazy writing and just thinking that, oh, this will be a good gimmick and not thinking about what that does for your character.
Yeah. And so then Prime Number shows up. We saw him in this powered mech whatever back in Gotham. Did he just take that out on the highway and parade it all the way up to Seattle? How did that not end up as, like, DC's equivalent of the white Bronco chase, and like just every news organization going, and here's the mech going down I-80. You know, so police can't get him to pull over.
How many threats, how many dangers, how many things do they fight in this issue?
Okay, so we start with the Dillos.
Which are these genetically modified armadillo cheetah
thing.
Creatures.
And not only do they fight them, with the backstory we're told that was not the only thing created.
Right.
So they've opened the possibility for tons of genetic things. So instead of giving us that...
So stupid name notwithstanding, the Dillos look cool.
Yeah, no, they actually...
Cool, and it's a cool idea that just if you need a generic monster, that's fine. But then what do we get the next time they attack?
We get Big Mech Suit, who then unleashes robot dogs. Wait a minute, you set up genetic mutants, but then you climax with robot dogs. What?
Like, unleashed by a guy in giant Robotech mech suit. Like, we got triple mumbo jumbo here. We got three different types of villain motifs, like three different villain types. And frankly, none of them are more threatening than the other.
No!
And... 37, we'll call him this time, prime number.
Yeah, sure.
He attacks with his giant killer Robotech mech suit.
Yep.
And he's going to throw 6 grenades at them.
Yeah.
He's just carrying, like he came out of, like, picking apples.
Yeah, I know. He's just cradling all these grenades.
Like, I'm sorry, your killer Robotech mech suit battle thing doesn't have guns of its own. It looks like it has miniguns.
It has a minigun right there. It doesn't have a grenade launcher.
So he's just carrying.
You just gotta get now. And again, were these in your lap the entire trip from Gotham to Seattle?
And what does she do? She just throws a
pillar.
Yeah.
And how? God, this pillar is just drawn so weird. I cannot for the life of me figure out how big it is supposed to be. But she just throws it, and the proportions look so weird. And Prime Number. He could have been saved if all he had done was put a plexiglass windshield on his mech. But no, he rides it like he's riding a horse, and there is nothing stopping any random thrown object from knocking him off this thing.
Which it does, and then, you know, grenades fall on top of him because he had 6 grenades.
Yeah, and it explodes, and that's the end of Sherwood Florist, and we have this final shot with Dinah and Jack and, I guess, Huntress. And I don't even know who these other women are, but it's just so many asses. So many asses and fire in this last page. It's like, look at all these butts. Yay. The end. Oh, my God.
So,
you know, it's funny. With 90s Comics Retrial, most of what I do is Marvel, because that's what I was buying in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a certain percentage of people who either know about the podcast or listen to it who tell me, you know, if you looked at DC in the 90s, it wouldn't be all so bad. The first thing I'm going to do to the next person who tells me that is send them this and go, shut up. Oh, dear God.
Can you believe they never published another one after this?
Oh, the last one? What?
If you were putting this one on trial, what would your verdict be?
Oh, how guilty. This would if this was on 90s Comics Retrial, this would absolutely be fine guilty of 90s era awfulness in a heartbeat with really no reprieve. You know, sometimes when I hand down a guilty verdict, it'll have some caveats for, you know, there was this, but it's not enough to save it. There's really nothing to save this. Mm-hmm. There's like a couple flashes of specific bits of art that are okay. And that's the nicest thing I can say about any of it. So
thank you very much, Nathaniel Wayne from Council of Geeks and 90s Comics Retrial.
Yep. And if you want to hear some 90s Comics Retrial, nice seamless segue, it's part of the Council of Geeks podcast. So if you look for Council of Geeks on either iTunes or Stitcher, you'll find it there. You can find me on a lot of things under Council of Geeks on YouTube and Twitter and stuff.
One final note about this issue. I mentioned last episode that the change in Black Canary's costume was something that DC had been working toward for nearly 10 years. I forgot to mention that at one point, Legendary Comics creator John Byrne was developing a Black Canary series after Crisis on Infinite Earths. Byrne's work on the Superman titles and other projects prevented him from doing anything with Black Canary, but he did sketch some initial designs that would give Black Canary shorter blonde hair and pants. So, with all that anticipation and the belief that Dinah's look was impractical and old-fashioned, we can assume that the new look was met with overwhelming praise from the readers, right? Well, Darren Vincenzo, the editor in charge of the letters column for Black Canary, decided to print the fan responses to the new costume in the letters column for issue 12. Here's what the readers had to say. So, what about dem new duds? Well, first off, they're not so different from the old ones. Cut off the fingers of her gloves, add a zipper, some leather, give her an old Selina Kyle haircut, and borrow a pair of Guy Gardner's ugly boots. Wow, I'm impressed. What about the rest of comics fandom? With her new costume, she looks militant, ugly, and quite frankly, mean. As for losing the wig, that's a big mistake. Without it, she has lost her trademark look, the most recognizable thing about her. Phil Matralli, Union, New Jersey. Dinah's costume is gone, and with it her style, her class, her superhero look. Now she looks like someone she should be arresting, as if she should have drug needle tracks running down her arms. What's the deal with the zipper down the front of her suit? Tacky. The whole look is cheap. Really butch. Chris Boney, address withheld. This new look for our Miss Lance really bites the big milk bone. It is unflattering to her as a woman and as a crime fighter, and no practical reason was presented for her to suddenly adopt such garb. Until BC is restored to her original costume glory, I'm afraid I'll have to write this series off for the time being. Eric James, Portland, Oregon. No, 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 no. No, 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 no. No. Well, maybe. I like the new boots and the leather, but where is the wig? Not only is it traditional, it sets her apart in the way you probably haven't thought of. BC is the only blonde, spooky chick in DC Comics. Look at Catwoman, Madame Xanadu, Huntress, Death, etc. All of these I Am One With the Night ladies have dark hair. Only BC can be mysterious and intimidating while sporting a Farrah Fawcett do. Bring it back. Gray Malkin, Conroe, Texas. I'm really going to miss the old costume. Now she looks so butch. I think it will grow on me, and it is more practical. But it was cool seeing her do stuff in her high heels and fishnets and blonde hair. I guess that's progress. Kevin Knopp, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Overall, Dinah's new look is much more severe than her old one. She now appears much angrier. I'm not sure if that was your intention when you made the change, but it's the impression I now get when I look at Dinah. I never realized she was this angry before. Bill Froberg, Gaithersburg, Maryland. You have created a new character and intend to pass it off on us as the original by putting the same name on it. I bought this book to read about Black Canary. She is a character I have always enjoyed. As Black Canary can no longer be seen in this book, I shall no longer be buying it. Stephen J. Hanna, Clearwater, Florida. Black Canary's costume doesn't hit the mark. Michael F., address withheld. When I read BC issue 9 and saw that someone changed her costume, I started going nuts. Please tell me that the costume she is wearing is temporary. Ricky Montanez, Carolina, Puerto Rico. Pain and terror is right. Pain, as I, and my fellow male readers, mourn the passing of Canary's fishnets. Terror, as I get my first glimpse of her new image. Bob Kowalski, Detroit, Michigan. I can't believe it. I don't want to believe it. She was perfect before BC issue 9. Now she looks like some hate-the-world Rambo punker broad. What's with the post-apocalyptic look that comics are leaning toward these days? Why the buzz cut? Yuck. Lisa Kerr, Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. Dinah's new costume stinks. She looks like a dominatrix into S&M. Chris Connolly, Dearborn, Michigan. My heart sank when I pulled Black Canary 9 from the comics shelf. Not only was Dinah in that ram bitch look, but she had a flat top too. I don't think it's necessary for a woman to look like a man to fight crime. Charlie Carter, Sarasota, Florida. I'm so angry and disappointed in how ugly Dinah is drawn that I will do the only thing I can do. I have stopped buying BC and will do my best to stop others from reading simply by telling the truth. Jackie Mills, address misplaced. I hate the new outfit. Canary looks butch. That's not her image. Gregory Larson, Albany, New York. What the hell is this new costume? Barf, gag, choke, yuck, no, are just a few of the words that come to this reader's mind. This new outfit is ugly, ugly, ugly. Black Canary looks way too butch. Larry Allison Jr., New Cumberland, West Virginia. I wanted BC to get a new costume. I knew she was going to get a new costume, but I was shocked by her new costume. I was expecting some kind of sleek leather Emma Peeler, not a skin-showing one. But I do like this new look with the short black hair. The only thing that I would add is a set of brass knuckles. Ed Homa Jr., Claymont, Delaware. Well, at least the last guy liked it. And that is how Black Canary series came to an end. And it's where this podcast is going to end. But remember what I said at the beginning of this episode. Flowers and Fishnets may be coming to a close, but Power of Fishnets is right around the corner. It's going to kick off with my review of the Bloodspell graphic novel, and then after that, every other episode will spotlight either a Black Canary comic or a Zatanna story. I'm really super excited for this change. Zatanna is a character I enjoy nearly as much as Dinah. Now that the Cerebium issues are done, I can focus on Black Canary stories that I enjoy reading for a change, and I can spice things up with a little backwards talking magic action. I hope you join me there when the new show begins. Like I said, follow my main Twitter feed at RyanDaily01 for more details on the new podcast when it's available. Until then, thank you everyone who has listened to this podcast and followed along with Black Canary Fan. Thank you Nathaniel Wayne and Chris Franklin who have each appeared on the show. Thank you Ange, Shag, Darren and Ruth Sutherland, and Brendan Fletcher for your generosity. Thank you everyone who has subscribed to the show, left comments and feedback, mentioned it on social media. Thank you all for being a friend of this show. And now, for the last time, if you enjoyed this show, you can leave a comment on the blogger page, blackcanaryfan.blogspot.com. There you can contact me with any questions or comments. You can also find me on Facebook and on Twitter using the handle at blackcanaryfan or at RyanDaily01. Or you can search the username Count Druncula. Flowers and Fishnets is not affiliated with DC Comics, and the views expressed on the show belong solely to the speaker. All music, audio clips, quoted text are used for entertainment purposes only and are believed covered under fair use. And I make no money off this podcast, so no copyright infringement is intended. Thanks for listening, and happy holidays.
Oh, but you must have misread. Misread me when I bet you. Cause you close the door and left me here blinded by the light. Don't let the sun go down on me, although I search myself. Always somebody else I see. If you just allow a fragment of your life to wander free. Cause I'm telling you that losing everything, it's like the sun going down on me.
Black Canary.
I'll need a sparring partner.
I'm Zatanna. What do you care about some leggy dame in nylons? Or have I answered my own question? Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for magic.
Black Canary and Zatanna. Together in one podcast. Power of Fishnets, hosted by Ryan Daly, coming in 2016.